Support for this KQED podcast comes from Bay Meadows, an urban village in San Mateo. Fitness and movies in the park, Caltrain, artisan eateries, fun for the kids, all just a hop from your front door. Homes now selling and leasing. BayMeadows.com.
Stories about the changes you don't see coming.
This is the dream that we all have, and it just happened to me.
That's On the Leap, a new podcast from KQED, launching October 6th.
A landmark decision by Governor Jerry Brown, signing legislation that allows California physicians to prescribe lethal medication for terminally ill patients.
What was a surprise to me is how personal he actually made it to his own sentiments, feelings, and his own moral views.
The bill faced opposition from many quarters, including the Catholic Church and others who worry it will hurt vulnerable people.
I'm disappointed and sad. I'm worried. Adding this very potentially dangerous tool to the mix is of great concern to people with disabilities.
But the governor's decision is being cheered by the widower of Brittany Menard, the terminally ill California woman who went to Oregon, where physician-assisted suicide is legal.
To me, it just shows what the thoughtful process he must have gone through. People who have really thought about this, I think they eventually come to that same conclusion.
I'm Scott Schaefer, and this is a California Report special. We'll get started right after this. Few things are more personal than a decision to end your life. And today, in a very personal written statement, Governor Jerry Brown said he had signed legislation giving terminally ill patients the right to ask for and receive lethal medication from physicians. I'm Scott Schaefer from KQED, and in this special broadcast of the California Report, we're going to talk through this momentous decision by the governor today, a decision that makes California the fifth state to legalize physician-assisted suicide. Now, we're going to hear from all sides in the coming half hour, but we begin with KQED's April Demboski, who covers health issues for the California Report. And April, first of all, what exactly will this legislation do once it takes effect?
Right. So the law will take effect in 2016, and it is intended for terminally ill patients, patients whose suffering has become so unbearable that they want to find a way to hasten their deaths. It requires two different doctors to determine that the patient has 6 months or less to live. Also, patients must be physically able to swallow the medication themselves, and they have to have the mental capacity to make medical decisions. So what that means is this is not for people who have severe depression. It's not for somebody with Alzheimer's disease.
And, of course, that was a concern early on of opponents of this. Describe, if you would, the intensity level. April, there's a lot of health legislation that goes through the legislature. What about this one? Where does it rank?
I would say that this one was really at the top. Governor Brown's statement was very personal. The statements from all the lawmakers during all the debates on the floor were very, very personal. People talking about witnessing their father or their mother die in excruciating pain and wanting to have this option. Also hearing from people on the other side saying that, you know, their mother had received a prognosis, but they live much longer than the doctor said.
That is April Demboski, KQED health reporter. And I want to bring in Senator Bill Monning, who was one of the key supporters and author of this end-of-life legislation, a Democrat from Monterey County. Senator Monning, good to have you with us.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. And, of course, we're pleased with today's signing by Governor Brown.
I want to just read a little bit of what the governor wrote, because it was quite an extraordinary statement that he released this morning. It says, "In the end, I was left to reflect on what I would want in the face of my own death. I do not know what I would do if I were dying in prolonged and excruciating pain. I'm certain, however, that it would be a comfort to be able to consider the options afforded by this bill, and I wouldn't deny that right to others." What do you make of the very personal nature of this governor's decision?
Well, I think it's a very powerful statement, and it reflects what we knew that he was deliberating. We didn't have any insight to whether he would or would not sign the bill. We were, of course, cautiously optimistic, but I think it's in keeping with this governor's leadership and his history and, you know, being in the Jesuit seminary as a younger man. He was influenced, as he mentioned earlier in the letter, by a letter from Archbishop Desmond Tutu, by the lobbying efforts of Brittany Maynard and her family. For us, it marks a historic day in California, and the success is only dampened by the loss of some very courageous people who fought along with us through the course of this legislation and didn't live to see or benefit
Let me ask you about that, because this has, Senator Monning, been a long time coming. It most recently failed to make it out of the legislature last month. What changed? Why do you think this time now it has made it not only out of the legislature but now into law?
Well, I think it's an idea whose time has come. I would say this legislation marks the most protective, most carefully crafted, and most broadly debated bill when compared to the other states that have established this right.
Well, let me just ask you, were there any changes made toward in this most recent bill that made it through? I mean, what were some of the more recent changes to the bill? They added safeguards and regulatory issues that got put into this bill to give people comfort who were maybe on the fence.
Right. It's a great question. And I would say from day one of crafting this bill, it was with the notion of building in those safeguards. And as it moved forward and in the recent iteration in the Assembly, really right up to the day before the final vote on the Assembly floor, we were open to fine-tuning, crafting greater protections. One of the amendments we took in the Assembly was that the patient would have to sign a final attestation within days before self-administering the lethal prescription. This bill has, though, protections from day one, two separate doctor visits. We had an amendment that require part of those visits to be absolutely confidential. In other words, just patient and doctor, no family member, no advocate, no conservator. Also, we insisted on a translation requirement. If this conversation between doctor and patient is in a language other than English, there has to be a certified interpreter, cannot be a family member, and any required paperwork also has to be translated for the patient. So we think this will emerge as the strongest law in the country. We think it'll become a model for other states. But I think today we do focus on the strength of the governor's statement and the compassion shown in his statement. You read that final paragraph where it became ultimately a very personal one. In the final sentence, he talks about finding comfort in knowing this right were there, whether he exercises it or not. And then finally, and he would not deny this right to others. And
right.
I think that was the strong message of Brittany Maynard's family, of so many others, that while some may argue from a religious perspective or a philosophical perspective, this is not for them and their belief system. Nothing in this bill imposes it on anybody. Absolutely voluntary. With
safeguards. Yeah. All right. Senator Monning, I want to thank you so much for joining us on short notice today. Senator Bill Monning, author
thank
of
you.
The Senate bill thank from Monterey County. Thanks so much. I want to bring in now one of the leading opponents of this end-of-life bill. Marilyn Golden is with the Disability Rights and Education Defense Fund. And Marilyn Golden, if you could sketch out briefly what your main opposition or oppositions to this bill and now soon to be law are.
Thank you. Where assisted suicide is legal, some people's lives are lost without their consent through mistakes and abuse. No safeguards have ever been enacted or even proposed that can prevent that outcome, which can never be undone. There is a deadly mix between our broken, profit-driven healthcare system and the legalization of assisted suicide, which would immediately become the cheapest treatment. Direct coercion is not even necessary. If insurers deny or even merely delay someone's expensive, life-sustaining treatment, they are being steered towards hastening their death.
And who's going to be steering them toward that? Are you saying physicians would do that?
Insurers who may deny or even delay someone's life-sustaining treatment. Another huge problem is the issue of elder abuse, also the abuse of people with disabilities, because where assisted suicide is legal under this bill, as well as the Oregon law on which it is based, an heir, that is someone who stands to inherit from the ill person, or an abusive caregiver may may encourage them towards taking assisted suicide, may legally witness their request, may pick up the lethal dose for them, and in the end may even administer that dose.
Let me ask you a question.
Because no objective witness is required at the death.
Let me ask you a question, though, because I know that some people have said that this kind of thing already is happening under the radar in California, where physicians, with the consent of the patient and the family, are given drugs to allow them to end their life. Wouldn't this at least put it under a framework of regulation and put some safeguards in place that don't now exist?
No. First of all, the safeguards under this bill are really hollow. But I really want to go back to your point that was addressing sort of what I was saying and compared it to what you were saying. You're talking about giving somebody an option who wants it. I was talking about the danger of elder abuse or disability abuse, where an heir, that is someone who stands to inherit from the ill person and does not want them around, or an abusive caregiver.
And I want to, before I let you go, I just want to ask, I assume that you're going to be monitoring this very carefully as it gets implemented. And unlike a ballot measure, you don't need to go to the voters to change this. I assume that your organization will be looking for things that need to be amended in this legislation to address those concerns you're raising, if in fact they become reality.
Well, I'm not taking any options off the table right now.
All right. Marilyn Golden with Disability Rights and Education Defense Fund. Thanks so much for joining us. Again, we're talking on this special broadcast of the California Report about the governor's decision today to sign very controversial personal legislation that will allow terminally ill patients to ask for and potentially receive lethal medication to end their life. I want to go now to Dr. Robert Brody, who's a palliative care doctor at UC San Francisco. Dr. Brody, welcome.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts, taking a little bit of a step back, on the situation here that this bill now affords? It removes the obstacle, the legal obstacle that terminally ill patients had in California, that they receive these kinds of drugs. What are your thoughts?
Well, this is an issue that I have been involved with for almost 20 years and have actually discussed with publicly with Marilyn Golden many times. I think this is a win for the people of the state of California. This allows them, but does not require them, to access this right at the end of their lives. That's the good part of it. Remember, though, that this is the most restrictive law in the country.
Restrictive how?
Burdensome on the physician in all the paperwork that is required by this law. And there is some sense from the physicians in Oregon that they won't participate under the law because of the burden of the paperwork.
Hmm.
So that's a problem. It's a problem of the perfect being the enemy of the good. This is definitely a step, I think, in the right direction.
What about some of the concerns that Marilyn Golden raised, that this her concerns not so much for people who want to end their life, but for vulnerable patients who may be surrounded by people who would like to see their life end?
This is something that Marilyn and I have been discussing for years, and groups have been closely, and I mean very closely, monitoring what's been happening in Oregon and Washington and Vermont and Montana, the other states where this is legal, and looking for cases of abuse. The Oregon law went into effect in 1997. There have been no cases of abuse that anyone, when it's actually looked at closely, can say this is wrong. We shouldn't be doing this.
You are a palliative care doctor, and for those who don't know, palliative care is basically to keep patients comfortable toward the end of their life when there isn't a good option for extending their life. Add to that if you feel you'd like to. But might this remove the focus away from palliative care toward getting it over with more quickly, to put it crudely?
Yeah. So palliative care focuses on continuing care when treatments to cure terminal disease are no longer an option. Some palliative care physicians are fearful of this, that this will take away focus from palliative care, but the experience in Oregon is exactly the opposite. when the Oregon law passed, all of a sudden, every hospital of any size had to have a palliative care program because the physicians really did not want to deal with this issue themselves, and they wanted the expertise so that they didn't have to. So, in fact, it encourages palliative care rather than de-emphasizes it.
All right. Dr. Robert Brody, palliative care doctor at UC San Francisco, thanks so much for joining us on this historic day. No person, I think it's fair to say, has had more impact on our civic discussion around this topic than a woman named Brittany Menard, a California woman with a terminal brain tumor. She recorded a video that went viral, described her decision to end her life, but she had to go up to Oregon with her husband, Dan Diaz, to do it, is where she died earlier this year, I believe it was, late last year. And her widower, Dan Diaz, lobbied the legislature to pass this end-of-life bill. And I spoke with him earlier today, shortly after the governor signed it, and asked him for his reaction.
My feeling, this is just enormous sense of gratitude. And reading the words that the governor used, he recognized that whether he could make this decision for himself is something that, of course, he would need to process. But the fact that not standing in the way of somebody like Brittany or Jennifer Glass or Christy O'Donnell or any terminally ill individual, to me, it just shows the thoughtful process he must have gone through. Because in coming to that conclusion, that's the conclusion that Brittany, it's the same one that she had come to. And it's the same one that people who have really thought about this, I think they eventually come to that same conclusion.
You had some conversations with him, and I believe Brittany did as well. Tell me, if you can, what was the tone of the conversation you had with him?
Well, no, the only conversation was between Brittany and him directly.
Based on what you heard from her in the room talking and afterwards, what was your impression of what they discussed?
Well, and that's the thing, that at the time, it was a conversation between a terminally ill individual all of a sudden on the phone with Governor Brown. And I can only imagine that's a hard conversation. And she identifies herself as a Californian who is unfortunately in Oregon because of having a certain amount of control here that she doesn't have in California. And at that time, though, there's not even legislation in front of him. And Brittany did ask, if a bill does get in front of you, will you sign it? He didn't give any indication at that point because there wasn't any legislation. So we introduced a bill in January. Her name coming up repeatedly around this topic of end-of-life options, I would think that from time to time maybe his thought process would go back to remembering certain parts of that call.
That was Dan Diaz, a widower of Brittany Menard, who, of course, the California woman who brought so much attention to this issue and a big advocate for the legislation the governor signed today. April Demboski, a KQED health reporter, I know that we have focused earlier in this half hour on the disabled rights community's opposition to this legislation. Who else weighed in against it?
Well, there were certainly religious groups who weighed in. The Catholic Church was very vocal about saying that they were opposed to this. Also, there was a lot of movement around talking about how different California's population was from Oregon's population. It's in California, it's a much more diverse population. We have a lot more immigrants, many who are undocumented. We have a larger low-income population. So there was a lot of concern that those groups in particular would feel pressure, even if not directly coerced, would just feel pressure to take a $100 pill instead of pursuing other more expensive life-extending
and something which may have safeguards against it, but you could see in the privacy of a room with a doctor and someone who doesn't speak English, for example, that could certainly be a problem.
Right. And, you know, we heard from Senator Monning that there's a requirement for a translator, but I think at the end of the day, nothing is 100%.
I want to bring in one final guest, and it's Elizabeth Wallner. She is a patient with stage 4 colon cancer. Elizabeth Wallner, you've been listening to our discussion for this half hour. What are your thoughts on the governor signing this bill today?
I am immeasurably grateful, and I do feel a great sense of relief. I don't know where my disease is going to lead, but just knowing that I don't have to go to Oregon in order to avail myself of this protection, or worse, drag my family through an end-of-life option that would not have been, you know, comfortable or peaceful, but would have led to a lot of pain and suffering. So to not have to deal with that is such a huge relief.
Are you, and if this is too personal, obviously don't feel any pressure to...
Yeah, we're good.
Are you at a stage where this is a real option for you in the coming months?
No, not yet. Not yet. My disease has not progressed to the place where this would be an option now. But certainly in talking to my doctors, you know, they're like, yeah, it's not a case of... if, it's more of a case of when.
Yeah.
So I definitely foresee it as being something that I would absolutely, I've already talked to my doctors about it.
Did they express any reservation about it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think particularly in the beginning, my oncologist had the most reservation. But by the end of our conversations, you know, I called him up and told him that I was going to fight. I didn't want him to find out on the news, basically. And so through the conversations, it then occurred to me, well, gee, if he doesn't believe in it and I'm going to fight this, can he treat me? And he was like, oh, yeah, absolutely. I believe in your right. And then throughout the conversations, I think he moved. You know, I think he moved from no to let's look. Because he understood that, you know, this isn't about suicide. I don't want to die. I have, you know, every reason in the book to live. I've got an amazing family. I've got a kid who's just now figuring out, you know, his path in life. I've got a family and siblings and, you know, friends and loved ones. I don't want to die. But if the disease takes that from me, the only thing that will change is the manner of my death. It is not assisted suicide at all. It is end-of-life option. And so having that option is just really powerful. Even beginning the process of working with Courage and Compassion and Dan Vias and, you know, talking to other people who have gone through it has been really calming for me. Now, you know, just getting little pieces of information, because prior to this, doctors really were hesitant to even talk about end-of-life options. And now I think that conversation will really open up and it will create less panic initially in a diagnosis, you know, because we can actually have conversations.
You'll know that that's an option.
Yeah, well, not only will we know it's possible, but we'll know, I mean, literally nobody has ever talked to me about what dying looks like for a cancer patient. So until I had started talking to Dan and Jennifer Glass's husband, Harlan, and some other folks, I really, you know, it was like looking like a big black hole. And so, you know, now as the physician mentioned earlier, when Oregon instituted the law, more palliative care specialists came on board, hospitals implemented that. I will have the option of just going in and talking to them upon getting a diagnosis. And so that fear factor is not going to be
as present.
As prevalent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm grateful for a whole host of different reasons.
All right. Elizabeth Wallner, we're grateful to you for coming on this historic day and talking with us not only about your personal situation, but how this new law will change the playing field for people with life-threatening illness. Thanks so much. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Once again, a landmark decision today by Governor Jerry Brown, signing legislation that allows California physicians to prescribe lethal medication for terminally ill patients. We will, of course, continue covering this issue in the days and weeks ahead. This has been a special broadcast of the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our team includes Susie Rocho, Rob Spate, Tyke Hendricks, Ingrid Becker, and Holly Kernan. Thanks also to KQED's Monte Carlos and Joanne Wallace. I'm Scott Schaefer. You can find much more on this topic online at californiareport.org. Thanks for listening. This is the California Report.
Support for the California Report comes from the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. More at irvine.org. And the members of KQED Public Radio.